and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. How's your week been?
Harrowing.
Harrowing?
Yes.
Why has it been harrowing?
You know, we like to do the odd, what would you do? Would you rather? An occasional philosophical dilemma.
Yes.
I had a real life dilemma this week.
Oh, this is good. Was it a life or death situation?
Yes.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. What do you mean, yes?
Yes, it was.
Well, why have I not heard about this before?
Now, often on this podcast, I might overhype things. Hmm. I might exaggerate a wee bit. But yeah. This is a legitimate, bona fide life or death dilemma that I was faced with. And I, like I say, was harrowed by it.
Wow. You weren't anywhere near the Pope, were you?
I didn't do it. Now, I want to know your honest feedback. I want to know what you would have done in my shoes.
Okay.
I'm driving down a busy road. We're talking 40 mile an hour road. So not stupidly busy, but busy enough.
Yeah.
No pavements, nowhere to stop. It's a rural part of the beautiful East Grinstead. So as you know, as I said, rural East Grinstead, there is wildlife knocking about.
Yeah.
And as I'm driving up a certain road, I see a pheasant. And oh. I know, before you start, I know. I live in a slightly posh area.
I like pheasants, though. I do still get it. I like to see a pheasant. If I'm out in the country and I see a pheasant, because it is that sort of signpost that you are in the country. When you see yes. a pheasant, I've made it out of the urban environs and I'm now enjoying the rural atmosphere.
Yes, I was definitely in the rural bit.
Okay.
Now, a trigger warning for any animal lovers.
Oh,
especially
Jesus Christ, what's coming here?
Especially pheasant lovers. You probably won't enjoy where this story is going, so trigger warning there. Now is your chance to turn off.
Yeah.
This pheasant,
yeah,
bless it, had clearly been seconds ago, before I passed it, hit by a car.
Okay.
And it's flopping around, badly injured. Now, it's on the other side of the road to me.
Okay.
I can't do anything right now. I also have the knowledge that after my next stop, in about 2 minutes' time, I'm driving back down the other side of that road.
Right.
This bird is badly, badly injured.
Yeah.
It has nowhere to go. I had the dilemma in my head. When returning in about 180 seconds back down this road after I've done my little bit of what I need to do and coming back the other way, if it's still flopping around, do I do it or do I not?
Do what, Ben? Put it, just say it frankly.
You know what I'm talking about.
What, just do run I give it the, over?
Do I give the steering wheel that gentle swerve to the left just to end the misery? Or do I let it suffer and give it the swerve to the right? Because it's in peril. It's in mortal peril. It might manage to flop its way up the embankment and make a miracle recovery.
Yeah,
that's not for me to judge. So I'm sitting there for the next 2 minutes. It reminded me, and again, another slight... We've done a trigger warning, so I might as well do a spoiler alert.
Yeah.
For Breaking Bad. It reminds me of the scene in Breaking Bad when Hank gets the one-minute warning phone call that something dreadful's about to happen to him.
Okay, yeah.
I'm sitting there thinking, what the hell am I about to do? Trev, what would you have done?
Well, I couldn't run it over with a vehicle.
No one wants the feathers in the tread marks of the tyres. I admit that.
No, I'm assuming. I mean, you say this is a busy 40 mile an hour road, right?
Yes.
I mean, are there cars around you?
Yes. It's not only a 40 mile an hour road where there are no pavements and nowhere to stop. It is I won't get into boring details as to why, but it's a road famous for accidents because. Again, I won't go into details, but just trust me, lots of accidents happen on this particular stretch of road.
But I'm assuming, therefore, that by the time you've gone to where you're going and turn around, even if it's only 2 minutes on that sort of busy stretch, someone else has, the D's probably already been done by the time you get back, right? So it might not be your responsibility anyway, in the end, whether you take the decision to finish this bird off or not.
That's as maybe. But I did ask you what you would do in this situation. Not your hypothetical future predictions. I want to know what you would choose to do.
Well, I would avoid it. I wouldn't run over it. I couldn't do that. I couldn't then drive on knowing that I'd done that. Even if you could argue it's the kindest thing to do, I still couldn't do that.
To put the poor thing out of its misery?
Yeah, I couldn't. No. No. I mean, in an ideal world, I would want to stop and remove it from the road, put it on the side of the road, and then maybe if it was to recover, then it's got a chance, hasn't it? I mean, in the middle of the road, it's got no chance, because whether it's you or someone else, its clock is ticking down.
I mean, it wasn't in the middle of the road. It was by the very... It was where the grass verge met the edge of the road. So it had a fighting chance to possibly flop itself onto the verge and maybe survive. But to be honest, it looked cooked. It looked done.
Yeah.
And as you know, I have a soft spot for the avian... creation.
Yeah.
And believe me, if this was a duck, I'd have stopped traffic myself, called an air ambulance and given it CPR.
I mean, it sounds like you're sort of a bird racist.
Now, last week or the week before, I was called a fascist and a Nazi. Yeah. And this week, I'm now a racist.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to ducks, save every duck. Save every single... Pheasants... You know, it's pheasant genocide is what you're putting forward here. As obviously, because you're not bothered about the pheasants. You see them as insignificant in the cycle of life. Just, you know, not interested. Just get rid of the... But if it was a duck, well, that's different, isn't it?
I also had the other heartbreaking thought was... And honestly, I'm 37 years old. And I thought, I don't know the answer to this. Do people own pheasants? Should I try and contact the local landowner and say, I'm terribly sorry? Should I go there and take off my cap and hold it to my chest and say, I've got some terrible news?
I don't think people own pheasants. I think they're
wild. Do they
wild...
just roam free?
Yes, I think they're a wild animal.
So they're like the bird equivalent of foxes?
Well, yes, I suppose so, yeah. Well, they're just a bird, aren't they? I mean, it's just a wild animal.
But they look kind of important. They're fairly weighty creatures. They're not like a robin, are they? So I wondered...
Well, again, this is bird fascism. Going here.
Is there
not,
some
it's not
farmer?
Like a robin, are they? They're sort of big, cumbersome pieces of shit, aren't they?
I mean, this is a big gap in my knowledge I'm exposing, but I'm just wondering, I had this terrible thought of some farmer at the end of the day sort of counting them all back in, thinking, oh, where's Betty?
There's pheasant farms, mate.
Where's Betty?
There's no pheasant farms.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not saying that people may not own the odd pheasant. You know, like people do own ducks. Like people do have ducks as pets. Maybe some people have a pheasant as a pet. But in general, yeah, but that's why people... I mean, people may have them bred on land, I suppose, for hunting purposes. You know, there's posh people. Yeah, go out and shoot some pheasants. But so maybe they have them bred for that purpose. But I don't think, you know, it's not sort of... they're still roaming wild, but maybe on land where they could be disturbed. Just be shot! Yeah, I'm surprised you're not taking up arms against the fucking pheasant.
Because I'm thinking, should I check if it's got a little collar? Maybe a phone number? Do I need to do something? So you're dodging the question. What would you have done?
Well, I told you I'd do. If I can't stop, I can't stop. But I'm not kidding here. I'd just drive on. You know,
so you
have
would...
that awful thought in my head that I've left a dying animal by the side of the road. But if I can't stop, maybe I would then find somewhere to stop and maybe give the RSPCA a call and say, I think there's an injured pheasant on the road. But the only thing about that is, I've told you this before, when I had to deal with one dead and one dying fox in a garden. And by the time I'd spoken to the RSPCA and got, the other one was dead. And then, you know, frankly, they weren't interested. So, I mean, I'm not having a go at the RSPCA. They've got a lot on. But I'm just saying that by the time you got through and done with everything, they're probably not going to come out. Yeah, by the time they come out, it's going to be too late, really. And then, essentially, I mean, this is what they told me. Essentially, we don't want to waste time coming out to a dead animal. So I had to go and poke the one that was alive initially. I had to go and poke it with a broom. They told me to do the broom test, right? And by the time I poked it with a broom, it was dead. I mean, I didn't. Oh. It did, yeah, I was poking it you know, fairly gently, but it was, let's say it had stiffened by the time I'd gone to poke it with a broom.
Rigor mortis, lovely. See, I know this of the RSPCA, and I know they only have interest in living beings. Once they're dead, the RSPCA don't give a fuck anymore.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a shameful thing to admit, but I would just lie to the RSPCA and say, yes, I think I see a heartbeat. I can't be sure. Then they come rushing round.
It seems to be a very faint pulse.
So then the RSPCA ambulance comes screaming round, and then they can remove the corpse from my lawn.
Yeah, but then you're taking them away from maybe another animal that desperately needs saving. You know, it's not a great... I mean, what I do know is you're not that far from a big RSPCA hub.
No, it's gone.
Is it gone?
Yeah, I don't know where they went. One day they were there, the next day they were gone.
Oh, it sounds like some sort of moonlight flit. Where have they gone? Have they released a whole load of pheasants? I'll tell you another pheasant-related thing. I mean, there was absolutely nothing anyone could do about this, right? Because the thing about the pheasant is, as you have already pointed out, they are a sort of, you know, a fair size beast, you know?
Yes.
And
I haven't told you the outcome as to what happened yet.
Well, no, we will get to that, obviously. but obviously, when they take off for flight, it takes them a little while to get up to speed and up to height. They're not stealthy. Do you know what I mean?
No, I would go so far as to say they're the opposite of stealthy. Yeah. They're clumsy.
So my parents were driving along on a motorway at, presumably 70 miles an hour. And a pheasant took off from the side of the motorway. But, of course, it's not getting up to a decent height very quickly. And it just smashed into my parents' windscreen. Amazingly, the windscreen didn't break. You'd have thought the force of that would shatter a windscreen, but it didn't. It sort of pounded off the windscreen. And as my parents said, you know, you're going at 70 miles on a motorway. You can't stop.
No.
The thing, even if, I mean, it's going to be absolutely zonked out anyway. It's going to be stunned, even if it's not killed outright straight away from that. But, you know, on a motorway, it's not lasting very long. Do you know what I mean? By the time it's hit the surface, it's been hit probably two or three times more. So, you can say that whatever happened ultimately to that pheasant, it was unpleasant but swift.
Yes.
And the lesson to the pheasant, so. You know, training to be able to get up to height quicker.
Yeah. No, you can't learn something if your mistake kills you, can you?
Well, there must have been others looking on.
Yeah, tell your friends what you saw here today.
Must have been others going, oh, shit, we'd better, flap quicker? Is that the way to do it? Maybe they were doing some test flights. Maybe he was a test pilot pheasant trying to get up to... They'd seen it happen before. He'd been training off-road to start with. He'd got up to height quite quickly, you know, above... Because let's face it, on a motorway, you've got to get above... juggernaut height. That's probably the height you've got to get up to quite quickly. A pheasant can't do like a vertical takeoff. It's just not got that ability. But maybe it was trying and it just hasn't worked. And the others, they've gone back to just doing it in the fields now. Maybe word spreading. I don't know what's happening in the pheasant community in East Grinstead. They're probably Scientologist pheasants, I'd imagine. And, so what I'm saying is that pheasants and roads shouldn't really mix. That's why pheasants need to be more in the countryside. What are pheasants doing by a motorway? I don't know. Pheasants, learn that lesson. Don't go near a motorway.
Yeah. You're not in your zone. You're not in your
That's
area.
Right. Like a sparrow, a swift, a robin, as you've previously mentioned. I reckon motorway's not a problem for them. Up and high quickly. Pheasants.
Yeah, I mean,
like a turkey or a chicken. You wouldn't put a turkey or a chicken by the side of a high-speed freeway.
No, I mean, not to get too mathematical about the whole problem, but I would have thought also, if I saw a, as you put it, juggernaut coming towards me, my first thought wouldn't be to go over it. Even if I had wings, it would be get to the left or the right of it, whichever's quicker out the way.
Mm.
It's not a hurdle. Just just dodge it at all costs. Don't try and jump it.
But again, like if you think of a pheasant and it's coming at it from the side, it's not it's not head on, is it? It's from the side. Think of the size of a juggernaut. You know, the length of it. That's quite an adjustment to avoid that, either left or right. You've either got to get in front of it and round, or round the back. And that's not good. You can't do that at speed if you're a pheasant.
I'd say you just need to take the path of least resistance. And I don't think trying to fly over something is faster than getting out the way of it. But what do I know? I'm not a pheasant.
I saw a pigeon fly right.
I don't know why that tickled me so much.
I saw a pigeon just fly into a van once.
This is what our podcast has become. I saw a pigeon once, as the beginning of an anecdote. Yeah.
Yeah. I just flew straight into the van. Like, no attempt to. I don't know whether it wasn't, like, whether it had been distracted by something. Maybe a sexy pigeon distracted it. I don't know, mate.
You weren't in East Grinstead by any chance, were you? Because once I was in a van and hit a pigeon.
Really?
And yes, and it definitely lost a couple of feathers, but I don't think it was wounded, but it definitely got a little bounce.
Right. Well, I don't know what happened to the pigeon that flew into the van. It fell to the ground. I'm assuming it didn't. Anyway, you know, people have owls fly into their windows, don't they? You know,
I've had it.
You've had an owl fly into your window?
I had a tawny owl. Wow. Yep.
What happened to the tawny owl?
It caused absolute chaos. This was before when I used to live in your neck of the woods in Croydon. Mm. We had a tawny owl. It wasn't my place.
Can I just say that you were still in a slightly more countrified part of Croydon that has owls?
It wasn't my house there at the time. It was Mrs. Ben's parents' house back in Croydon, and they had a big sort of conservatory built on.
Well, I mean, I know where that property is, and I also know that that's very near the bird sanctuary.
Yes, you're right, and that might have been the problem. And obviously, being a conservatory, it's mainly made of glass, so obviously the owls won't necessarily see that it's not a structure they can't fly through. And we were sitting there peacefully in the sort of kitchen conservatory area, having a lovely dinner or something like that, and then all of a sudden, wallop. An owl, a tawny owl, hits the conservatory, but has concussed itself and is clinging to the sort of guttering upside down,
oh, wow.
Sort of staring at us, all woozy and confused.
Yeah.
Maisie, the dopey Labrador, absolutely panicked. It was a thing of comic genius. She barked, ran backwards to get away from it. As she ran backwards, she ran arse first into the oven, which was on cooking our dinner. She obviously, felt the heat of the oven on her backside, screamed again, and started charging around the kitchen. It was like animal chaos in about 3 seconds.
Wow! When I was in the Cubs, one of our leaders, I'm sure this happened. I'm sure I haven't imagined this, but he told us one week that he'd been attacked by an owl.
Attacked? They're not very. They don't normally attack anything other than mice, do they? Owls?
Well, I know, but it swooped down and attacked him. And there was something. I seem to remember him saying they think it was something to do with him wearing glasses. There was some link to the glasses and him being attacked. But yeah, I think it shook him up a little bit. There was a thing recently,
the
wasn't
glint,
there?
The glint of the glasses attracted the bird or something?
Yeah, maybe it looked like the eyes of a mouse glinting up. I don't know. Because there was a thing recently, wasn't there, in a village somewhere where a falcon was repeatedly attacking villagers, like causing them injuries. You know, it was coming down and scratching their heads and stuff, and they finally had to catch it.
You wouldn't want to mess with a falcon. That could do you some damage.
I know. They were even talking about having to euthanize it, but thankfully they caught it.
Now, I'm an animal lover. Mm. I really am. But I also am a big believer in self-defense.
Right.
So if a falcon starts beef with me out of nowhere, I will fight back.
I don't think you're going to have a chance to fight back because a falcon's going to come and strike at such a speed, you're not going to know it's happened till it's gone.
And it's true of any animal. I mean, if it starts the beef, then I'm going to finish it if I'm given the opportunity to do so.
Right. So if this falcon is terrorizing the village that you are in and it's attacked you once, do you take on the lead huntsman role then? Is it like Taken? You go, I will find you and I will kill you.
Yeah, I have a particular set of skills. If only that were true.
The owl.
I was going to say about the owl. The only reason, by the way, because I'm not the most intellectual man. The only reason I knew it was a tawny owl was because we did have to call out the RSPCA or the... Is there a special avian section of the RSPCA?
Well, it's the RSPB, isn't there?
That's what I was going for, but yeah. I wondered if that was right, because I thought that might be like the special boat service or something. I didn't want to imply I'd called out the SAS for this owl.
Yeah, I don't think they'd come, to be honest. If you phoned the SAS and said, it's an emergency, we've got an owl hanging from a drain pipe.
So fortunately, because it was still there and quite badly concussed, they turned up and told me, oh yes, it's a tawny owl. So they took it away. So yeah, that was all quite shocking and dramatic. But that happened.
Change of animal. My parents, they come home one night and driving up the road, headlights on, and there in the middle of the road, in the beam of the headlights, was some sort of snake. Quite a biggish snake.
We don't get big snakes in this country unless it's escaped from somewhere.
Well, this is what had seemed to have happened, because they basically, the snake wasn't moving. It was just in the middle of the road and not moving. So they phoned the RSPCA and spoke to, well, I don't know whether they spoke to someone there, or they eventually spoke to some sort of snake expert, right? And they said, I don't know if that's describe the snake or send a picture. I can't quite remember. It was established it wasn't a venomous snake, but it wasn't like a grass snake. You know, it wasn't, it definitely been a pet probably and escaped. And they just said to them, if you can pick it up and sort of put it in a pillowcase, and we'll come around in the morning and collect it. So that's what my parents had to do, that to get this snake and put it in a pillowcase, put it in the shed, and the next day came and collected it.
Okay.
You wouldn't expect to see a snake in the middle of Thornton Heath, Croydon, would you?
No, and you wouldn't. I mean, I think in fairness, I wouldn't expect to ask the people phoning me to find a pillowcase and deal with it, but... There you go. RSPCA do seem to want you to do the dirty work for them.
Well, it would have been, if it wasn't moving out the road, it would have been killed eventually, wouldn't it? So it had to be saved.
Which,
anyway, look,
brings us neatly back round.
Well, I was going to say, this must be the longest gap between the beginning of a story and the ending, without a middle bit of the story, really, with just deviations. So what happened to this pheasant?
Well, I'm heartbroken to bring you the news that I mean, you kind of killed the ending of this story with your sort of Nostra Trevis sort of predicted the end of this story. Sadly, by the time 2 minutes had elapsed and I was on my way back down this road when it was on my side, either it had succumbed to its injuries or someone had elected to put it out of its misery, or someone just accidentally gave it the finishing blow. It was no longer with us. I had made the decision, if you're interested, that I would not hit it. Even if it was still flopping about, I thought, I don't have it in me to, even though it's the kind thing to do, I don't have that in me. Because I couldn't live with myself knowing it might have survived. I couldn't do it. But I think it's nice to know that we are not, both of us, because you came to the same conclusion, we are not pheasant pluckers. We are, in fact, pleasant fuckers.
I mean, the other thing I would be thinking the whole journey, though, is I wonder what accompaniments you'd have with pheasant. Now, Ben, it's that time of year where, if you're a certain age, you're having to face exam season.
Yes, the dreaded time of the year, the thing that would keep you up at night worrying as a school child or a young learning person. I mean, not me, but other people I hear were quite bothered by it. So,
I mean, it brings back such horrible memories of just the anxiety, isn't it? The anxiety of them all. At the time you're doing them, well, because you're told the whole time that it's the most important thing you've ever done in your life to this point, are these exams. You know, that's what we were taught. I mean, I hope schools are slightly different now, where they don't put so much pressure on you. I'm sure they still do to an extent, obviously. But I just remember the thing in our school, you know, basically, you know, this is it. This is it, boys. You know,
so I do want to quickly clarify. The reason I didn't lose any sleep out of my exams isn't because...
You went very posh there.
Did I?
Over my exams.
Well, I am a bit plummy, naturally. I can't help that.
You're practising for the pheasant shoot later on today.
I've already got one in the bag, just to add up to the numbers.
Yeah, you've been blooded. It's fine.
It isn't because I have some sort of weird God complex where I think I'm intellectually superior and don't have to worry about these things. Yeah. It's because I just genuinely didn't give a shit.
It's a terrible time of year. I've got three godchildren who are facing exams over the next coming weeks. I've got two just about to do their A-levels and one just about to do their GCSEs. So I thought, what can I do to help my godchildren? Now, unfortunately, because I am very thick, I don't think I can be much help to them on the mathematics front, for example, on the geography front. I mean, I gave up geography after 3 years at school. Didn't do that for GCSE. It's too difficult. I don't want to know about an Oxbow Lake. Don't care.
Yes. Why did we not learn where places were? Why was it all Oxbow
Lakes? Yeah, that was never geography, was it? That was never geography. Because I thought geography would be easy. They'd just give you a map and say, there it is. Learn it.
Yeah. No, it was nothing like that at all.
It was all about...
erosion.
Geology, yeah, erosion, geology. Well, anyway, so I can't be much help when it comes to that sort of thing. But one of my godchildren is doing philosophy. And I thought, now this might be an area where I can help, because I like to think that, you know, I think things deeply. You know, I've got a very philosophical mind.
Oh, people in our circle refer to you as the Sigmund Freud of the podcasting industry.
I'm imagining when I'm gone, there'll be books written about me. There'll be maybe even a statue. There might even be, you know, memes with my quotes on, just because of the wisdom that I spout on a daily basis.
Certainly spouting.
But then I thought, well, maybe for a philosophy exam, my views on the world may not be that helpful. You might need to know about the more famous philosophical quotes and philosophers.
Well, you did give me the heads up that you wanted to discuss philosophy, and you asked me to come up with some of my own philosophical inspiration. So we have done a little bit of preparation for this. So I'm ready to compare notes.
Well, what I love about the sort of more well-known philosophers is that you assume that everything they say is very deep. You know, I think, therefore I am. Those
cogito ergo sum.
There you go. Well done for throwing in a bit of the Latin there.
You're welcome.
Cultured, this podcast, isn't it?
Unusually, we're talking about pheasants. We're talking Latin.
I think
philosophy.
We really hit your milieu.
It's since I left Croydon, mate. I'm honestly on a different plane now.
Do you wear a barber wax jacket these days? And a nice bit of tweed trouser.
And a deerstalker, yeah.
So, but what I like about the philosophers is they did have a sense of humour. They had a nice sense of humour. So Socrates, for example, one of the most famous philosophers, said this: my advice to you is get married. If you find a good wife, you'll be happy. If not, you'll become a philosopher.
You almost needed a little drum lick there, didn't you?
Yeah,
that's a good one.
But then is he basically saying that he didn't get married? Is that what he's saying? Or he didn't find a good wife?
That does ask more questions than it answers. But yeah. Would you mind if I interject with one of my philosophical heroes?
Yeah.
I've done my homework. I've even prepared examples of my philosophical hero.
Okay.
And it is, you've said Socrates. I'm going to offer up Chris Eubank,
the boxer.
Would you like a sweetie?
A
sweetie.
I'll take a smartie.
These are smarties, indeed.
A absolutely stupendous confectionery.
There we go.
I mean, to start with, he sounds like a creepy man.
Wouldn't you like a sweetie?
I mean, that's the sort of thing you're told to run away from.
I will not have my philosophical hero besmirched, okay?
Would you like a sweetie?
It is a stupendous confectionery. We've learned something there. We know about sweeties now. We know about smarties.
Have we learned anything really from that?
Yes, I think we have. We now know Smarties are a stupendous confectionery.
I saw that Quithiel Mancinia did turn up for the big fight at the weekend. Where
oh, my God.
He turned up dressed as what I can only describe as a Nazi pimp.
Yes, I'm not sure if he'd appreciate that.
Well, don't wear that sort of coat. The most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. I mean, I know he's got an eccentric dress sense, but that was ridiculous.
For those not in the loop, we're referring to the Chris Eubank Jr. Conor Benn fight. Mm. And for months, and even in the week leading up to it, Eubank Sr., my hero, had basically sworn blind he wouldn't turn up.
I'm not going to go to the fight. It's a disgraceful fight. I'm not going to be there.
I watched the pay-per-view last night, and it was reminiscent of like a WWE backstage segment. They cut to the backstage area, a limo pulls up, and out jumps Chris Eubank Sr. And honestly, I screamed like a fangirl. Honestly, the best thing I've seen on TV in a long time. It was better than the fight, and the fight was amazing.
Back to some proper philosophy, if you don't mind.
I've got more to come from other philosophers, but okay, we'll see.
Albert Einstein, more a scientist, but still
another heavy-hitting name.
He said, two things are infinite, the universe and human stupidity. And I'm not sure about the universe.
Oh.
Now, there's a man who thinks like I do, that basically humanity is stupid. In general, we are thick beings.
Yes. Now, I hadn't planned on this quote, but I think I might have told you it before as well recently. There's a lovely quote from George Carlin, rest in peace, which is, think of someone really thick that you know. Don't think of me before you say it. Think of how thick the average person is, and then realise that 50% of the population are even dumber than them.
Yes.
True, but worrying.
The human race is on a downward trajectory, in my view.
Yes.
That's the sort of thing that'll be put on a mug after I'm dead.
Do you think so?
Yeah, there's a little quote there. You might want to clip that. That'll go on a mug after I'm dead in some sort of philosophy store.
Well, in response to that, quite thoughtful output from Einstein. Mm. I've got another amazing philosophical point from someone I truly respect. It's Chris Eubank.
Oh, God. What's he talking about this time? Milky Ways?
He's talking about the beauty of the English language, and I'd like you to respect that. It's a very thoughtful point.
English. The King's English. What word jumps out at me? Utensil. It's delicious. It's delicious. You know, I mean, what do you say to that? You know, do you have the correct utensil for me?
What is it?
Hard-hitting, intelligent, thought-provoking utensil.
But I want to know the context of this quote. Because it sounds like a man in an asylum talking to himself, because he's finding what he's saying absolutely fucking hilarious for a start.
The context is someone asked him, what's your favourite English word?
Right.
And that was the answer.
Utensil.
Yeah.
Utensil. I mean, it's a good word.
It's a nice word.
But there's much better, like flippity-gibbet.
Yes.
Like, pick a word that's got a bit of oomph about it. Like, utensil. Utensil. Like, a utensil is something describing a quite boring thing. So it's actually a boring word.
I would actually argue that the amount of debate and passion in your voice that's happening right now is proof that Eubank Sr. is a philosophical genius.
I suppose that's true. He's evoked an emotion.
He has.
One of amazement, surprise, anger even to a degree. And I suppose that's what philosophers aim to do. They aim to provoke thought and response. And I suppose that's what he's doing. I'm starting to see that maybe there's more to the man than I thought. There's more to the man than a Nazi overcoat.
Can we just stress for legal reasons, it isn't an actual Nazi overcoat. That is just your perception of the overcoat.
No, it's the sort of thing Hermann Göring would have worn.
Trev, please stop digging.
No, I'm just saying. Nazi pilot would have worn as well.
For God's sake. But usual on this podcast, I find myself sort of theoretically trying to throw the mud back into the hole, but you're digging too fast and I can't keep up.
Right. I'll move back to some proper philosophy, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Now, I must admit, this is a philosopher that I'd not come across before. This is a guy called Ludwig Wittgenstein.
Okay, I can't say I've heard of him either.
But I love this quote. He said, I don't know why we're here, but I'm pretty sure it's not in order to enjoy ourselves.
Oh.
Well, think about it. I mean, life is a struggle, isn't it? Life isn't an easy thing. And I think we can have moments of enjoyment, but I sort of feel like we're probably not here to enjoy ourselves, because actually life is a pretty miserable existence. There's sadness, there's horror everywhere you turn. You have those moments in life where tragedy strikes, and it's an awful thing.
I can't think of a single piece of philosophical thinking that I disagree with more than what you've just said.
Right, okay. So you think we are here to enjoy ourselves?
I think that's the only reason we're here.
Right.
Okay. Because of everything you just outlined. And I don't want to get too serious and too heavy, but life is a depressing, heartbreaking slide to the bottom to eventual death.
Yeah.
So, sorry, I said I'd try not to, but I did. So the only thing we can do whilst we're suffering through the inevitability of this cruel existence, surely to God, is to try and laugh our way through it.
But I think what he's saying is that that's like joy is almost like a man-made thing.
It has to be.
Therefore, existence itself isn't about enjoyment. I think that's what he's saying.
Right. Okay. Because I understand life as a persistent, inevitable shit slalom to death.
Yeah.
So I make it my goal in life to try and have as much fun as I can along the way. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah.
You gotta be all buttoned up and miserable along the miserable journey. Sod that. I'd rather have some fun.
Do you see this thing this week, actually, that scientists have observed for the first time chimpanzees doing the equivalent of meeting up and going for a beer?
Really?
Yes. So they gather around fruit that's fermented, right? And normally they don't ever share food. But with fermented fruit, they share it round. And it's sort of like a bonding experience for the chimpanzees. And what they say is it's almost the equivalent, because they get a little bit drunk on it, obviously, because it's fermented fruit. And it's the equivalent of us going out with our mates for a beer. They all sit around and they bond over some fermented fruit. Isn't that? So there's even more evidence that we've evolved from the primate world, I think.
Was there any evidence of that one chimpanzee who sort of didn't bring anything and doesn't put his hand in his pocket and just sort of eats everyone else's fermented apples and never offers up any of his own?
Oh, there's always one. There's always one, isn't there? There's always one who never buys a round or doesn't put his hand in the pocket, you know, at the end of the night when it's share the bill. You know, I'm only going to pay what I've had. There's always that one in there. Everyone else is putting in, just split the bill between us all. But I didn't have a starter. Well, don't fucking come out then. You're boring.
Would you like another one of my philosophical quotes?
Yeah, okay.
Now, I mean, going from what you've just said about sort of the fermentation of the apples, the enjoyment of sense, that brings me neatly to another sensory philosophical thought from one of my philosophical heroes. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a gentleman by the name of Chris Eubank.
Are they all Chris Eubank?
No, don't spoil the game, Trev. We've just gone on from a sensory chimpanzee experience to one of my heroes talking about a similar sensory pleasure in life. And I feel like it's an important thing to learn.
Good day, Mr. Eubank. I do fragrance content on YouTube and would love to know your favorite cologne. And on top of that, maybe your favorite book.
My favorite, my favorite cologne, or my favorite book is the Book of Metaphysics. Now, to the second part of the question, colognes, well, light blue, smells like me. It's such a, oh, wow, so, oh, 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 Soon you'll know that I am the man I'm supposed to be.
What is going on? When is it ever end? What is this?
Excuse me. Thank you.
I mean, he's fucking crackers, isn't he? What is going on? Have I dropped some acid in the last 10 minutes or something?
Could you hear him spritzing himself?
Yes.
No, but he must have
getting high off. I'm not going to make any suggestion there's anything other than a cologne in that bottle that he...
But. No, but he must absolutely reek of that stuff by now. He must have emptied the entire bottle on him.
The thing is, when you see Chris Eubank, you know that he... Like there's a strong smell coming from that. Do you know what I mean? He's so well-groomed that you know he smells of some sort of aftershave or cologne, as it turns out. You almost smell him from the television set, don't you? You know... I'm not going to say he smells good. I'm sure he smells lovely, but it's going to be overpowering.
Well, yes, I think that clip is evidence that he smells probably overpowering. He looks like an incredibly well-groomed man. But yes, with that amount of spritzing, I imagine you could smell him before you can see him.
I'm not sure we're helping my goddaughter much on her quest to become an expert in philosophy. But
speak for yourself. I think I am.
Is Chris Eubank stuff coming up in a philosophy A-level exam?
You never know. This brings me neatly to my next example. It is, of course, Chris Eubank.
Of course it is.
You better watch out, dreadlocks. You better watch out, because we have come for you. Oh, sorry. It's my mother's tongue again. That's it, right. It comes through. You'd better watch out, because we're not playing. We're real, and we are a terror. The procedure will be parliamentary, Rastafari.
I don't know what any of that was.
There was a threat.
I was going to attempt to do his voice there, but I'm not going to risk.
No, I think that. It's a dodgy one. We're in dangerous territory. Yeah. Some accents are fine.
I'm not going to offend his mother tongue.
No, but it was nice to get the translation as to what that means. It's an important lesson, I feel, to learn. Don't mess with people. We're not here to be messed with, and we'll see you off.
Right.
Rastafari. I'm not sure I can pull that off, can I?
No.
Even a plummy English accent saying Rastafari.
I mean, that was even more offensive than trying the accent, if I want to. Now, I'm going to move away from some of the more well-known philosophies for a moment and turn to film director Guy Ritchie.
Oh, I know him.
He says, it's okay to have beliefs... just don't believe in them. Deep. You've really got to think about that. That's like the movie Inception. You've got to get within the thought.
I must admit, I don't fully understand it. It's okay to have beliefs, just don't believe them. So believe in what you want, but
question
allow,
them, I suppose.
Allow it might not be true, I suppose.
Maybe question them. Maybe... I don't know what he's saying. But it's deep. It sounds deep, isn't it? I mean, again, right, that came up on a meme. And that's what I'm saying about my thoughts. It doesn't have to really mean anything, but it can turn up anywhere.
Well, I think that's true of anything. So long as it gets you thinking, then that's all that matters. And I sort of think, I almost feel like that's a sort of live and let live comment. Like, you believe what you want, but realise it might not be true kind of thing. I'm not entirely sure, but
the thing is, I think it's what's genius about it is it's an infinite thought. You believe in it, then don't believe it. You
it's
have
a paradox.
Yeah, it's an infinite thought loop.
Would you like my final philosophical offering?
Yes, please.
Now, this is really deep, this one. I've saved simply the best till last.
Right.
Now, this is from a real hero of our time, a real...
Yeah. We know it is, mate. Don't beat about the bush anymore. We know it is.
It's real hard-hitting thoughts on crime and punishment. Oh. The theories of understanding the point of view of the perpetrators, forgiving, and then realising when they've gone too far. Real hard-hitting intellectual stuff here from None other than Chris Eubank.
Some years ago, I was driving my truck, and I remember having it parked outside a hotel in London called The Landmark. So overnight, the truck was broken into, smashed the window, and they took the television, which was in the back, and whatever else they took. To where I was like, well, this is what happens. I know what that life is like. And so, therefore, I held nothing against the assailants. However, from the back, I went to the front, and I went into the glove compartment, and my strawberry bonbons had been taken. I called the police. I was furious. Steal what you want, but never touch another man's bonbons. It is illegal. It is against the law and principles of of treats and sweets. True story. I called the police on the strength of that. I didn't mind the video and the television being taken. Didn't mind a smash window, but never touch another man's bonbons.
Powerful, thoughtful, intellectual.
He's a bit obsessed with sweets, isn't he? Like, you know, there's a high percentage of his philosophical quotes about sweets.
Yes. A stupendous confectionery, bonbons, and believe me, he's got the right utensil to consume them with. So if that doesn't get her through her A-levels or whatever it is she's planning for, I'm not sure anything will.
I'm going to finish with another well-known philosopher, Plato.
Oh, okay.
And he said, wise men speak because they have something to say. Fools, because they have to say something.
Yeah, that stings, that one.
Welcome to the Trevor Ben podcast. Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. If you're about to sit a philosophy exam, I'm sure we've been a big help.
I hope so.
Maybe we when I tag this, when I tweet about this week's podcast, maybe I should put it out as, you know, a revision aid.
Yeah.
For anyone doing a philosophy exam.
And if anyone's taken any offence to whatever we've said, you know, it's all in jest. Let's have some parliamentary procedure and we can all just get on with things, okay?
Okay, well, before we wrap up, as always, some recommendations. What you got for us this week, Ben?
Well, I don't have my own recommendation, but I would like to pass on a Mrs. Ben recommendation. I'm assuming, Trev, you've got some sort of special sting or jingle to play in for a Mrs.
Ben recommendation. Well, I was going to say this is the second Mrs. Ben recommendation in the last few weeks you've thrown in. I thought, well, maybe next week I'll just get her to the podcast. she seems to be doing more research for it than you are. And
it took me ages to clip those quotes together. How dare you?
I mean, she probably did it. And the other thing I will say before, no offence to Mrs. Ben, but as I think I brought up on last week's podcast, her last recommendation wasn't actually any longer available. So I'd like to check that I can go and watch this after we've finished.
Well, she was only watching it yesterday, so right. I can safely recommend, if you're quick, it should still be there.
Okay.
It's on ITVX.
Yeah.
And it's called Killers Caught on Camera.
Oh.
If you're being very anal about things, there's a colon after the word killers if you're searching for it.
Anal and colon, all in the same sentence.
It's the Trev and Ben podcast. That's our level. Killers, colon, caught on camera. And it's basically about, well, it kind of does what it says on the tin.
Yeah, I don't know what else you need to say about it, really.
So it's CCTV footage, hidden camera footage, all that sort of thing, which is the element which has exposed the truth behind real-life killers. So, like I said, what it says on the tin.
Sounds good. Sounds like it's right up my street. I've got a couple of recommendations. First of all, Netflix, a drama. It's only three parts. It's a few years old, but I think it's new to Netflix. It's called Black Work. It's a sort of detective drama. Basically, a police officer couple, right? One's working undercover, one's sort of an on-the-beat bobby, but the bloke gets murdered. And then it's up to Joe, heartbroken at her husband's demise, to go on a journey to find who killed him. And, oh, she uncovers some truths that she doesn't want to know.
Oh, that sounds good.
It's got Sheridan Smith in it. She's always brilliant.
Oh, she's brilliant in everything.
So I really enjoyed it. It's one of those, only 45 minutes each, three episodes, you know, binge it in one go. It's brilliant.
Love it.
And the other thing I'm going to recommend is a podcast that I'm so glad I've discovered this, because a few years back, I would have talked about this on the podcast. There was a brilliant series, two series of the BBC podcast called 13 Minutes to the Moon. The first series was about that. It was about the Apollo 11 landing on the moon, and it was sort of all based around the last 13 minutes of descent, but obviously they'd had all the history to it. The second series was about the Apollo 13, saving the mission. And when I went, this was a few years ago, Ben, I went, I had to go to a meeting at the BBC, creative purposes. And they were teasing in the meeting about there's going to be another series, and they said it's going to be all about the shuttle program. And I was thinking, oh, this is going to be brilliant. And then it just sort of never came. And then I suddenly thought about it the other day. So I wonder whether that ever did appear. And I searched for it. And it seems that whatever happened within the BBC, it didn't get made within the BBC. But the team that made all that have gone independent. And they've made a podcast called 16 Sunsets. And it's all about the shuttle program. And it's about the history of how the shuttle came to be. They're obviously going to look at certain landmarks, the things that went well, the things that didn't. I'm three episodes in. I'm loving it. It's so good.
So it sounds like we've got all bases covered. If you're a true crime enthusiast, if you like a nice gritty detective drama, or if you're a nerd, there are some good recommendations there.
Yeah, so there we are. Plenty to keep you busy over the next week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trevor and Ben on X and on Blue Sky. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Stupendous.